Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
Hello and welcome back to the Autism Mums podcast. Today we're talking about something that many families quietly battle with every day. When eating stops feeling simple and starts feeling scary. You'll hear us mention ARFID quite a lot.
ARFID is Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder, which is more commonly known as ARFID. It's a condition characterized by the person avoiding certain foods or types of foods, having restricted intake in terms of overall amount eaten or both. Anyone of any age can have ARFID. It occurs in children, teenagers, and adults. Although people with ARFID may lose weight or have low weight, this is not a criteria for ARFID. It can occur at any weight and varies in different people.
If you're wondering, is this just picky eating? We'll talk about a few signposts that could indicate it may be more. We'll share our family's experiences and the ways we've found to support our children. As always, we're here to share our own experiences in the hope that they may be useful, not to diagnose. If anything you hear raises concerns, do speak with your GP or a qualified clinician.
So, Victoria, I think you have the best knowledge out of both of us on this one. Do you want to talk a bit about your experiences?
Yeah, I can talk about our experiences. So my son doesn't have a diagnosis of ARFID, but in his autism diagnosis, he's noted as having ARFID behaviours. This was explained to me as the reason was there was very strict criteria that a child had to meet to actually get a diagnosis of ARFID, but you can have behaviours. And a lot of autistic children are affected by ARFID. And so this is because many autistic people experience sensory issues and sensory overload. And that then leads to a heightened sensitivity when it comes to eating, resulting in the symptoms and behaviours of ARFID.
How would you say you know if it's picky eating or if it's ARFID?
I could talk about that with my son. If you're looking at your child and wondering if this is more than picky eating, so things to be aware of, are they avoiding major food groups? I know my son certainly was, so fruit, meat, vegetables. Are they reacting to the different temperatures? Are they having sensitivity to the textures? Could they be gagging, retching? Have they gone over that spell of they're not toddlers anymore, they're maybe plus six? That's something to consider. And if their diet is limited, I believe it's to less than 10 foods, that's another indicator of ARFID or ARFID behaviours. Perhaps not noticing that they're hungry. I know that's something my son certainly struggles with, identifying that he's hungry or just missing meals entirely. Avoiding food at social events or avoiding social events where there is food, parties were always so difficult for us. We would never sit at the food table. We would have to go well away from that. Thank you very much. Struggling to stay at the table during meal times. In terms of timeline, I think he was about 1.5. What he would eat really narrowed. But that's quite common for this age group. And it's often called food neophobia. And I took him to the doctor at the time. And I was just told that he would outgrow it. It was picky eating. It was very normal for this stage of development. I don't know. I went with that at the time. I was a bit uneasy about it. The things that he was eating were waffles, and I think it was probably fish finger. I've got this written down somewhere because we did take him to an occupational therapist at the time because it was really concerning. We didn't think he was eating enough. The only fruit he would eat was raspberries at that time. And then interestingly, it had to be a specific number of raspberries. And he clearly was very anxious around eating. It was real anxiety about eating foods. So he just ate the same thing over and over every day. I think the GP said to me that around 5, he would have outgrown it. And it was before we took him to the occupational therapist, because she's the one that gave me quite an interesting assessment, which I didn't realise at the time that she must have been thinking along the autism lines.
Right.
Because she observed a lot of other things in his behaviour. And when I went back to that, when we were going through the diagnosis process, yeah, it was interesting to see what she picked up, like lining up the toys, grouping them by order of colour, things like that. But in terms of the food, so she gave us some tips at that time, and it was to try to get him to play with food, touch food. So I remember we used to do it. We used to get different bowls out of different textured foods, and it was really me playing with it. He would touch it a bit, but the idea was that eventually he would get some on his hands and lick it, but she never did. He never did. So his diet really didn't expand from what it was at about 1.5. It's still principally the same things he eats at 11.
Right.
There has been some expansion, but we've also lost some safe foods, but it's not hugely different.
Okay. And so when it came to the early stages of when it was all changing and his foods were reducing, what sort of behaviours were you seeing then? Was he getting upset?
Really upset about the food and just fully refusing, but yeah, very upset with the refusing. His speech was delayed, so he didn't have any words to be able to tell us. I don't know if you remember when we went to Florida, so he was almost 2. This was when it was very noticeable. And I remember before we left being so worried about what he would eat over there. And we went to the supermarket when we got there and bought Oreos. He was eating Oreos, still eats Oreos. And he would eat chips. And sometimes he would eat chicken nuggets at that point. So that's mainly what he ate the whole time we were there. I do remember there was one day where he tried a cube of watermelon.
Okay.
But that was it. And as I say, he didn't speak at that time, so he couldn't communicate exactly what the problems were. I was thinking because he had some food sensitivities, like they seem to run in our family for dairy.
Mm-hmm.
So we had trouble with dairy, and I was wondering if it was anything related. It was maybe food allergy line at that point at about 1.5. But I think that was just separate.
And do you find the appearance of food makes a difference to him?
Yes, there's a huge difference. So there was, when he was in reception, they were doing an activity with potatoes and they were making it into faces. And he was so horrified at the look of the potato that he had to be taken to join a different year group in a different classroom away from the food. And it was at a parents' evening that the teacher told me that they always had to remove him for any food-related activities. Just the look of it, just he didn't want to be in the same room as it. And that's still a big issue. He'll talk about the horror of broken food. Now he can talk and express it. And I realise that he thinks pretty differently about food than I do, for sure. And the other morning, as we've talked before, he has a very restricted diet. It's not what you would class as a healthy diet, I'm sure, but that is best. We have to get the calories in. So he will usually start a day at the moment. It's with a Yorkie bar. And it was the first day going back to school, so already anxious. And I went to check on him. I'd taken him the Yorkie. He likes to eat by himself. That's another thing on the whole.
Yeah.
It's much more easier for him to eat on his own in his room. And I said, "How are you? How's everything?" He said, "Terrible." I said, "Oh gosh, what's the matter?" Thinking school-related anxiety. And he said, "The Yorkie's broken in half." I said, "It's okay, we have about 100 of them downstairs. That's one for me. We will find you a whole one." That still bothers him to the extent that it bothered him when he was tiny, if food is broken. Food has to be just so. When you cook for a child with the ARFID behaviours, it's you get used to it. So you asking me about it, I'm having to think, what do we do? But honestly, so potato waffles, they have to be perfect. And what perfect looks like has changed over the years. So they used to need to be very lightly cooked to the bare minimum. Then he went through a stage of wanting them a bit more well done. Now it's somewhere in between, but they can't look too brown. They can't have marks on them. And you wouldn't believe Bird's Eye at one point. They must have had a dodgy batch of potatoes. I don't know, but there were black little spots in these waffles. And they come out of the oven and I feel the horror. I'm like, oh my God, it's he's never going to eat. This is going to be rejected. So I've spent ages trying to lift out the black bits and pat it down so it doesn't look like it. Another thing is I've cooked them in the toaster before and they like curled up. It's a real big deal trying to get it right. And once I find that once it's wrong, it's not a case of, oh, we'll cook some new ones, we're done.
Right.
It might be that he can't face eating anything the rest of the night. It might be that I can get crisps. I say crisps, he eats pombears, or a safe food that's a snack food. We couldn't do anything cooked again. Unless it was McDonald's. McDonald's are trusted.
Yeah. Going back to the waffles and the different looks and what's acceptable and what isn't, is he able to communicate why?
He told me the other day, because we've been on fish fingers for a while, just one fish finger, and he nearly threw up when he bit into one, and he said it was because it was too crunchy and then it was soft and it was cold. I promise it wasn't cold when I served it, but then he'd spent quite a long time looking at it before he could get up the courage to try it. So actually, for the first time, we've ditched. Anxiety makes the eating worse for my son, which I believe is quite common.
Yeah.
So at stressful times, the food is going to be the first thing that goes. If other things are going on that are really stressful, we really need to be on the safe food. And certainly that week before they returned to school, I think we went to McDonald's. It was four times maybe that week. Because McDonald's, you get the same, don't you, every time. It doesn't vary. And then that creates feelings of safety. This was explained to me, actually. I did a beet eating disorder course a couple of years ago. It was one that the Senko at his school recommended to me. And it was so helpful. We were talking about another thing that he really hated. So he likes chocolate, but soft centres.
Right.
Oh my goodness, the horror. If you bit into something and it was, say, caramel in the middle, I would really panicked. And the woman taking the course explained to me it's because of trust factor. So it looks like one thing on the outside. You bite into it, it's not. It's something different. She said, you take a blueberry, for example, looks blue on the outside. You bite into it, it's all white. It's not the same texture. That course was so helpful to me in understanding it and understanding why, so raspberries were his solid fruit for a while until he had a sour one. And I think that's the difficulty, isn't it? Like live food, non-processed food, that variation.
Particularly fruit.
Sometimes it's sweet, sometimes it's sour, sometimes it's firmer, sometimes it's softer. And if you're anxious and you don't trust that food. So it's very tricky.
I mean, we do have similar with my son, but most recently, would you believe, so he has oat milk and the other day he refused to drink it because he said it tasted watery. And I was thinking, well, it's the same one he has all the time. And then I looked on the packet and it had the, you know, the thing we all fear, new recipe. I thought, oh my goodness, that's what it is. They've changed the recipe and now he won't have it.
And they're so sensitive that they detect this. We've had this with foods too. Or even if it's the same, but the package has changed.
Yes.
Then that trust has gone again.
I've had that with crisps. Like they've been running a promotion and he didn't want to eat them because of this. The packet looked different because they had the promotion on. It's like, why do they have to do that? And do you find the safe foods change or are the safe foods and that's it?
The safe food might come and go a bit. If I need to add a food back in, often the first thing I'll try is a food that used to be on the safe list. Sainsbury's once sent out these letters to the customers. You may remember.
I do.
And we got one saying that we had bought the most Mr. Kipling angel cakes in the whole of the town. It's not something that you want to be proud of. Not something to be proud of. But there was a while when angel cakes were really a massive part of his diet. And you know why? It's because they come individually wrapped. They're rectangular. They look the same, except for when they don't. But for a long time, they were trustable. cakes that came, any home-baked cakes that varied in their shapes and their sizes and their taste, not so trustable. When he was very tiny, particularly angel cakes were the staple. Now, things that make us lose it is they can be a bit tricky to pull apart. I don't know if you've had this, the plastic can stick. Yeah. Sometimes it lets a gap in. And he had one and it wasn't as fresh. So they were off for a while. He will look around the side and check it. And sometimes there's a little air bubble in there.
Right.
And now he'll say to me, no, I can't have that because of that. When he was younger, he wouldn't express the why. It would be a full no. He can't right. then go on from there and debate why an air bubble would be a problem.
Okay.
Sometimes I've tried eating it myself and saying it doesn't do me any harm if that's what you're worried about. But he can't articulate to that point what that problem is. But yes, I'm back on the angel cakes thing. The worst part of that was just Sainsbury's. That didn't count the angel cakes that we bought at Morrison's and the other shops as well.
Okay.
And we have expanded in recent years to burgers a little bit. And that, though, is the McDonald's effect. He has a good amount of trust in McDonald's. He had chicken nuggets and chips there for a long time and their lemonade. And I think he was looking at the menu occasionally. So I find when he's going to expand his diet, I don't know if you find this the same, it will be when he's feeling relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not other things going on. And that was something they talked to us about on that course. And that is the time, if you want to try to introduce food yourself, that is going to be the best time to suggest it. But I often wait to see if he shows interest and then jump on that. So at some point, his sister was having a burger and he said, oh, that smells nice. And then we jump on that. Do you want to try one? We don't leave it any time. We're straight there getting that burger at the time that he feels able to try it. And now he will eat a plain burger with ketchup from McDonald's. What's a bit tricky is to chain that to home or another establishment. But we have done on a couple of occasions. And at the moment, that's what we're having to try at home. I found, I don't know if there's any better, but Warburton's do these sort of processed looking buns that are fairly the same.
Okay.
They're not that different looking from the McDonald's ones. And they seem to be acceptable. We're just about getting away with a burger at the moment, but the burger is smaller than the bun.
Okay.
That does cause some anxiety because McDonald's, it's, I think it pretty much matches. And he did say that to me, that he doesn't like that. And we had to get the meat right up to the edge and then eat it until almost the end. So we won't quite eat the whole thing, but at least it's getting some dinner in.
It's the amount of detail, isn't it, that they process. It's fascinating.
Yes, because I might not even, I probably wouldn't even look.
Mm.
I wouldn't even notice.
Yeah. And what sort of effect does it have on you as his mum?
Obviously, I go around looking through everything with his eyes. I don't have any food issues myself, apart from intolerances, but I feel like you develop this filter. I find it with environments too. I'm looking at it thinking, I'm not sure he'd be able to cope with that. No, that's not going to work. Those kind of things go through my mind. But then I think they become part of your life. You don't even realize you're doing these things or thinking about these things. They're automatic. If we were going away now, yeah, that does cause me anxiety a bit. But I think, what can I take? What foods will there be? After watching all the cruise ships in the bay during COVID, we wanted to try a cruise and we went on a cruise to Norway. But before, I was researching the menus. I emailed them even to ask the kind of buffet foods they had. He had a very long spell many years where he would eat the Alpro soya desserts for breakfast. At that point, I knew he would always eat those. I couldn't assume that I would take him to a buffet and that he would be able to pick anything. And I asked them if they stocked these, and they said they did. And so we were at the buffet, I would find those straight away. But often we would eat in the room, because I said it's not as simple as eating, it's where you're eating as well. Occasionally, if we go out for dinner or maybe at Christmas, his Christmas meal was Father Christmas gingerbread man, and it was just for a small amount of time and it was in his control. I have to remember that this is anxiety related, so you don't want to make that anxiety worse. Anxiety is contributing hugely here, along with the sensory factors, though I know that it varies, but for us, it's always about taking that pressure off and just trying to feed him when he's ready with what he's happy to eat.
I know we've been given the advice before of they'll eat if they're hungry enough, and to just leave whatever in the hope that they'll eat something healthy. But in my experience, they just don't eat.
We were told to do this when my son was little. It may have been by the health visitor, and it was the worst week ever. And I wish I'd never done it, because he didn't eat. He just cried and he was just hungry. And that's just cruel. Luckily now there's more support around. Although ARFID is a much newer recognised eating disorder, there are some really good places that you can go to for support if you're not getting that from your GP or school or the people around you. We had a lot of support through BEAT Eating Disorders, which we can put links to in the show notes. And there's also ARFID Awareness, which can offer support. I think this is a topic that we could talk about and probably will talk about much more in other episodes, but hopefully that's a useful overview.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.